Not Quite Right features discussions that are unfiltered and uncensored and may include themes that are inappropriate for younger listeners. Also, I swear a lot.
Something doesn't seem quite right.
Welcome to Not Quite Right. My name is Ed. And this is the sixth of a series of interviews that Amanda and I recorded at the Words on the Waves Writers Festival this year. This time, we're speaking with Bruce Wolpe. Bruce is a senior fellow at the United States Studies Centre at the University of Sydney, and he was at Words on the Waves as part of the New World Order panel, and to talk about his book, What Trump's Second Term Means for Australia. We spoke to Bruce about the first 130 days of Trump's second term and what it might mean for American democracy. So here is our conversation with Bruce Wolpe. So we're here at Words on the Waves with Bruce Wolpe.
We certainly are. The waves are here in the last light of a beautiful day. Winter is coming, so this is a pretty good place to be.
We've definitely got the best seat in the house over here in this little studio that we've got.
Yeah.
So you've just come off your panel, which is entitled New World Order. Tell us about the panel.
We had a great panel. We had Emma Connors, we had Jeff Raby, myself, Jonathan Perlman, experts really in their fields. Emma more on Asia-Pacific, Jeff on China, Jonathan on foreign policy generally. And then me talking from a U.S. perspective, American politics perspective. And it was a surprisingly deep conversation, just given we only had an hour. My focus was really on what's happening in America and how is it affecting American foreign policy and the changes in the world. And there are a couple conclusions that we have, you know, just over 130 days of the Trump presidency. America is no longer the leader of the free world. And that is a really profound thing to say. No one is following America anymore. And they're figuring out, how do we protect ourselves? What do we do for ourselves? And then on the economic front, we've had a structure erected after World War II on trading relationships and freer markets and reducing tariffs, duties, and taxes so that there can be prosperity and security around the world. There have been ups and downs, but mostly up. That system is now gone because Trump has trashed it. And so that has really profound consequences. And American foreign policy is no longer led under Trump by idealism and beliefs in that American values can be universal values. We stand with people who support those values. We want to advance the world. It has now become an exercise in self-interest. Is this good for the United States? And not good for the United States' values, but good for the United States in purely material terms. And that is a profound change. We're going through it. So the question is, what does it mean immediately? How long is this going to last? What do we come out another side? We don't know.
Well, I mean, you're here in Australia, so.
Well, but Australia, let's just talk today, even though this will come out some days after we record this. Well, today, the president went to Pittsburgh to talk about a steel plant that Nippon Steel is going to take over from U.S. Steel. And Trump said, it's terrific that Nippon is investing so much, but I'm going to unilaterally raise the tariff on steel from 25 to 50%. And that hits Australia. It's steel and aluminium. It wasn't 25% until today. And that is kind of stunning. He can just do it. And he expects Australia to just kind of take it. And the trade minister, Don Farrell, said this is not how you treat an ally. It's not how you treat a friend. And he's right. So there's going to be much more of this.
It's amazing how quickly this has all happened as well. Like you said, 130 days,
yeah,
roughly after he took office, and decades worth of trust built up in America that is now, it's as if the parent has left and everyone realizes they have to kind of fend for themselves, especially when you see the treatment of like countries like Canada as a prospective 51st state. And realizing, actually, we need to form our own relationships and act, at least for the time being, as if America is not our friend.
Yes. On the security front, the relationship front, I mean, that is still, there's a long way to go. Because the question is, where is the U.S. going to land? Is it still going to be a democracy? Is it really going to be a functioning democracy at the end of Trump's term or not? If it is, fine, American democracy is safe. But if it's not, the United States is no longer the United States. Now, under those circumstances, why should Australia be the closest ally Why should we hold them and say they're our greatest ally when they're not acting in the way they have for several generations now? And that is a real problem. On the commercial front, I think Australia is doing very smart things. Protectionism is coming out of the United States. Australia is a trading nation and believes in free trade. So what are they doing? They're setting up the talks to establish a free trade agreement with the European Union where it failed a year ago, 2 years ago. They're back. And I think there's going to be a deal. And to use Trump's almost famous word, a deal. And that would be really important. So Australia needs to forge a series, as many free trade agreements as possible. The U.S. is going to hell on protectionism, but if free trade lives for Australia and the benefit of other countries around the world, okay.
I'm wondering if you have a view on, I guess, Trump's motivations and
power.
We talk about like protectionism as a bad idea, but it's also coming from a place of like wanting to encourage industry. Do you think this all comes from this point of power, or is there like some good intentions there that are just misguided?
There are four isms to Trumpism. It's protectionism, tariffs. It's nativism, borders. It's isolationism, which is withdrawing from the world and all the architecture that was set up. World Health Organization, Paris Climate Agreement, World Trade Organization, all that. The United Nations, we don't even have a UN ambassador there right now. I can vote in both countries. It's really good. And then nationalism, America first. So that's what Trump projects. But he wants, at every occasion, he wants whatever is being engaged in to benefit the United States. Anything that benefits another country, he's hostile to. It doesn't matter that Australia has a trade deficit with the United States. They're still going to punish today. They're just going to keep raising the tariffs. And it's really a very difficult thing to accept after a century of mateship, as an Australian ambassador in Washington coined it.
Do you think there will be some pushback? Because I remember in Trump's first term, the first 100 or so days were also very frenetic and full of all this change. And there was that deep state pushback. Is that happening now? Is it going to happen?
There's a big difference. The big difference is that he came in, did not win the popular vote, won the Electoral College, a minority president, becomes president. But there were enough people around legacy from the day before he became president to push back on him, even though he controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House. Today, he controls the House, the Senate, and the White House, but he has conquered the segments of society that were organized and ready to test him profoundly in the first term. So there's no testing. He's getting away with. He's able to project his power across everything that he wants to do. Now, his base is about 40% of the country. They are the people who feel that the world outran them, jeopardized their jobs, their incomes, their economic security, quality of life, and Trump is their hero. He's the populist champion. They believe in him. They have followed him for 8 years now, and they voted to elect him because they want him to do the nationalism and the protectionism and the borders and all that stuff. They voted for him so that they believe he will do it. They want him to do it.
Yeah, and they voted for him, I think, not really understanding what that meant.
I disagree. They did. They voted for him. They understood exactly.
But do you think they understood what tariffs meant and the fact that it resulted in an increase in costs?
This is why members of labor unions have been voting for Trump. He's going to protect their jobs. He raised the tariffs to 50% in Pittsburgh today for the steel industry, saying, your job is going to be secure. The cheering from the union crowd was huge.
Yeah, but is there still the understanding that that means that goods that they're purchasing from other countries is also going to increase in cost?
This is where, what is the final payoff here? If there's rampant inflation and that triggers a recession and the Federal Reserve has to control the inflation, has to raise interest rates, and the economy goes into the toilet, suddenly it doesn't look so good.
I'm wondering your thoughts on, we're talking Trumpism here, to what extent that extends beyond Trump himself as an individual. Like if he were to die, for example, or for whatever reason, move out of public favor, to what extent does Trumpism live beyond Trump?
Trumpism succeeded Reaganism. Ronald Reagan changed the political culture of the country, and it took 12 years from his election in 1980 for the Democrats to field president and vice president from the center of the country to Clinton and Gore to win. And they had two terms. So it will take the repair job on this if, in fact, that's where the country lands and say, no, we went too far and too extreme here, we got to come back. The repair job will take many years. In the area of health and science, he's dismantling the Centers for Disease Control, the National Institutes of Health, all the research. Attacking the universities means there will be less research in the benefits of flow from. Rebuilding that, it's not going to be done overnight. It's so much easier to destroy something than to build something.
And you're talking about the potential loss of democracy, right, itself as an outcome. Do you think that is Trump's aim, or is that a natural consequence of just, I guess, the dilution of the normal order of things that this presidency is about?
Well, he's using very strong tactics to deport people. And the question is whether those tactics come into play against people in cities who are demonstrating against his presidency. And he calls in the military to restore order. That's barred under law. And that's why the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, said he made a mistake when he marched with Trump into Lafayette Park to the church where he held up the Bible. This is in the wake of George Floyd's murder. But the current chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he'll follow the order. So if you have, Trump is attacking the media. He wants to take away licenses of certain TV networks. He is sending a bill to Congress to defund National Public Radio and the Public Broadcasting Service, public TV. If you take over the media, troops in the streets, go after your enemies, your people and corporations who still support diversity and inclusion and everything like that, turn the tax authorities on them, take away licenses they have under the Securities and Exchange Commission, either drop or start antitrust investigations. That's all within the power of the president. And if he does that, then no, America doesn't have a functioning democracy anymore.
I think it's interesting because just the role of the president in the U.S., it's fairly unique, I think, that environment, the power that's given to the president there. Because, of course, it's a union, right? It's a union of 50 states. Like, I guess people are questioning if Trump is taking power that doesn't actually exist in the presidency.
You're right. This is a really profound question. The way the Constitution is structured, you have three co-equal branches of government. You have the executive, the legislature, the Congress, and the courts. So far, the other branches of government are not standing up to Trump. In the House and Senate controlled by Republicans, they're not. It's early in the game. If their view changes because things go south really badly, Republicans will start standing up and saying, you can't do this, but they're not there. So they're not doing any investigations or oversight about what Trump is doing. They're not passing any legislation he doesn't want to pass. And the courts, so far, have, even though there have been over 175 rulings against him yet, nothing that he started has yet been permanently stopped by the courts. There is this case on the tariffs and whether he can proceed with the Liberation Day tariffs that will get to the Supreme Court. And that would be, I think, a defining moment. If they say, you do not have a basis in law to impose these tariffs, and say, thou shalt not, he says, yes, I can.
Yeah, and that seems to be the strategy so far.
If that happens, that's an existential moment for American democracy. No president has disobeyed an order of the Supreme Court.
And there's no example that I can think of Donald Trump ever walking something back and admitting that he doesn't have the ability to do something he's already done.
He never admits. He never retreats. He never recants. He only does one thing, forward. Go forward and crush. And that's what he does.
So in this environment then where, you know, we're talking about democracy, I'm wondering, is there a post-democracy state? Like what comes after democracy? Or is that the goal, is to get back to democracy in your view?
Like, it's just too early to say. And what you have now is just a huge culture war reaction to what is seen as woke, progressive, radical left policies, ideas, initiatives. He wants that destroyed, and then we'll see, you know, what can be built. So it has gone so far in the Pentagon that they've taken down web pages of people of color serving in the arms, heroes in the armed forces. I mean, this is disgusting.
Yeah. And I mean, it's shocking to the point where I can't actually fathom the support for it. Yeah. But yet it carries on. It's justified somehow.
On diversity, equity, inclusion stuff, I mean, he's denigrated people of color and women who serve in high positions. When there was the crash of the helicopter and the plane outside National Airport, Reagan National Airport in Washington, shortly after he became president, he says, well, Maybe the crew was a DEI hire. In other words, he's making you look at women of and people of color in power and saying, are they really up to it?
Mm.
And so it's poisoning perceptions. And that's dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
It makes you think about things you weren't thinking about before. And it can only be in a pejorative way. I love these happy notes that we're in.
Well, I wanted to pivot because so your book is called What's Trump's Second Term Means for Australia.
Yes.
So Trump is over there. We can't do anything about him. What does that mean for Australia?
Well, as I discussed in the session, Australia's democracy is one of the strongest in the world. It's going to survive just fine. But if he retreats from the world, what does that mean for Australia? Because we're part of a security blanket of allies. If he turns on his allies, then what does that mean for Australia? So I think the most important thing in foreign policy Australia can do is go deep and go big and double and redouble, redouble and redouble again what was started under Albanese and Penny Wong, rebuild the relationships that Australia has throughout the Asia Pacific. And they've done an excellent job, but it needs more. And then figure out, well, who are our allies? And it would be those in NATO and those in Japan, South Korea, and so forth. But we really need to think about, if the U.S. is no longer a great ally, what are we doing with AUKUS? What does that all mean? And what are we going to do with China? And how do we engage and so forth? So that's all to be done. But I don't have any doubts about Australia's identity or threats to Australia's identity or what it wants to achieve. But when you have a political campaign here, the Queensland election last year, and abortion shows up just a few days before the vote, well, where do you think that came from? And then a Liberal senator says, let's make Australia great again. Well, where does that come from?
But this is the thing that I feel is alarming to me, is that people are chronically online, and those national borders, for people who are online and for people who, I guess, their understanding of politics or whatever might be quite limited, how are they perceiving that? They're not perceiving this divide between Australia and the US. They're perceiving where I'm in the same conversation with these people across the world. So
yes, but I still think even among conservative, politically conservative Australians, there's still a great sense of pride of this country as distinct from the United States. And they know when, well, just look at the last federal election. The voices were clear. We're not going to go down that road.
It is discouraging, though, to see some of that same rhetoric pop up after that election was, you know, lost for the Conservatives in Australia. The rigged election rhetoric, the same kind of anti-democratic. I'm hearing lots of people call for getting rid of preferential voting in Australia. It's really discouraging to see that kind of response.
That's been happening, but that's been happening for years and years and years. No one honestly believes it. There's no significant number of people who believe it. And look at the recounts that have occurred after this election. It comes down to a handful of votes. Yeah. No one's going to court. No one's saying it's rigged. They trust the AEC, as they should. So we're going to be okay.
Well, that is encouraging.
That's encouraging, I think. Thank you very much, Bruce.
Thank you.
This has been a special presentation of the Not Quite Right podcast in collaboration with Words on the Waves Writers Festival. Check the show notes for more information about Words on the Waves and the books mentioned in this episode. If you're new to the podcast, please join us again for our regular episodes where we talk about media, culture, and the art of writing.
Something doesn't seem quite right.